Ruth is a honey of a little book, 4 chapters long, probably written in the time of the kings, they say, because of the literary style. So it's a backward-looking book. Not a fairy tale, but true. We need a little bit of history to understand it. The Moabites were a people that lived on the other side of the Jordan River in a great rifted valley that is now today Jordan, the country of Jordan, Transjordan, Jordan. It is mostly to the southern part of that country, across from the Dead Sea. They were enemies of Israel. There were great battles that were recorded in other annals later about the taking over of that land when the Jews came into the Promised Land, battles that were fought and lost. There was no sin in marrying a Moabitess, but you could not enter into the worship of the Lord for 10 generations. Later, the law would say, 10 generations. Could they come and attend? They could live near you, but not attend. So there was a great uncleanness of their practice, of which I am unclear what those practices were. But they had shrines and practices that were apart from what is healthy as human beings to live and do and be like. They were not a light people, but a dark people. This story that we hear is one of extraordinary grace and mercy of a people that received a Jewish family at a time of famine in safety, and the love that grew between the Moabite's daughters-in-laws and the Jewish mother-in-law. So let me read Ruth to you, and I'm going to highlight passages in each chapter, but I think we have time to read 4 chapters. So I'd like to read the book of Ruth, and then we'll talk a little bit, perhaps, about somebody else, too. I won't say who, because we might not get to her. Ruth 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and 2 sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. Now, the time of the judges, we just read about Jael, who killed the man with the tent peg. The great mighty battle that Barak fought with Deborah against the enemies of Israel. There's the story of Samson, Gideon, times where God raised up rulers to restore Israel as they would get far and farther and farther away from him. He would send a Redeemer Savior back in to bring them back. And in the time of these days, there is this story. In the days of Judges, when they ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and 2 sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name, Naomi, and the names of his 2 sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now, that means they were from the surrounding area around Bethlehem. We know from footnotes that Elimelech's name meant the goddess king. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her 2 sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her 2 sons and her husband. Now, this was terrible suffering. 10 years in the land after her husband had died, and then to lose both of her grown sons. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. Now, it was home to Naomi, but not to the girls. With her 2 daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her 2 daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." So she blesses them. They have been good, both of them have been good daughters-in-law. They honored her sons, they honored her. And even though it looks like she's about to take them back on the road, she seems to have a change of heart. and dismisses them. It's interesting here, it doesn't say to your father's home, but to the home of your mother. The reason for that is the mother would look out for him. The father responsibly had given them over, and so maybe his inheritance would not go to the girls. Whatever he had, whatever their ways of laws were, the mother would protect them so they could return to her home, and she then blesses them with the hope that they will be given in marriage again. Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." And Naomi does not, she ascribes to the Lord. This is a significant thing. She ascribes to the Lord what has happened to her. She does not say, "The Lord is good. This came from the enemy against my family." She does not have an understanding that anything can get to her other than through the Lord's hand. That is her understanding of God. He is sovereign. The terrible thing that has befallen her, her widowhood, she's a mother, an orphaned mother, so to speak. She's lost her children. She says, "This is the Lord who has done it. Why would you come with me?" There's a sense here that she does not have a blessing to pass to them through herself. It's not that she feels responsible. She might feel responsible, but she certainly thinks the Lord is responsible. It isn't a complaining thing. "I always did good, and now he's done this to me. Or I don't know what else I could have done, and now God has done this to me. We did everything we could to get food on the table, and now this." This is not the spirit we see in Naomi, whose name meant pleasant. But she does not back away. We talked about this the last time we were together, the honesty of speaking what the Lord has done when you ask him for something. And being true to what the answer was, even if you can't figure out why the answer is that way, it is still the way the Lord answered. And so she blesses them with truth and hope. She hopes they'll be married and she's returning because God has done this to her. At this, they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Now, Orpah is not in any sin whatsoever. She does exactly what Naomi told her. She has cried. She loves Naomi. She was a good daughter-in-law. But she returns to her mama. Ruth, of all the stories we've seen, suddenly we see somewhat like Joseph would have been, someone extraordinary. Somebody who steps outside of what is the fitting right thing to do. She does the gracious thing. She loves Naomi like a mother. She is clinging to her, and she makes an amazing declaration that sadly has been used in marriages more than in daughters-in-law and mothers-in-laws. How wonderful that would be. You know, I had the dearest mother-in-law who now lies ill with Alzheimer's, the sweetest mother-in-law in the world. She was a mess, cute as a button. Never knew a stranger. She was a handful. I'd go out of my mind when she came to visit for about 4 days, and then she could live with me. You know, but 4 days was tough. She liked to line up everything on the windowsill, and the way she did my house was totally undone in a matter of, like, 5 hours. She met every single neighbor in the neighborhood and invited him to our church. I was so embarrassed. I belong to Randy Russell. I mean, it was like, oh my gosh. You know, I mean, it was, she knew no boundaries in the sense of her world and ours. Our world was her world when she came. And she behaved accordingly. And it took a while for me to embrace that. But I did. I did embrace that, thankfully. And she was always leaving money, tucking it in your pocket. She knew so many stories about people. Sometimes it was hard because they were always sad stories. You know, the latest thing in the newspaper, and she'd go find the people that the things happened to and befriend them. You know, I mean, really. My roommate from college had moved to the Chicago area, and she gave birth to triplets. My mother-in-law heard about it, became their official babysitter. Got the cribs, got their whole room set up, was devoted to my roommate's family. I hardly ever saw the girl again. Okay? But my mother-in-law, because she was my roommate, she was hers. She had this kind of amazing ability to include. Ruth is extraordinary. She takes over in the sense that she is coming under and into the blessing of Naomi, even though Naomi calls it a curse. The hand of the Lord is against her. She's embracing Naomi at a time of emptiness, not a time of fullness. It's the friend in need is the friend indeed. When someone befriends you when you're really in need, that's really a friend. That's what she's doing here. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. So she refuses her people and her people's gods and embraces Naomi's. But she does it as a rider, doesn't she? She doesn't just say, I've seen the great things your God does. There's something in the love of Naomi that is drawing Ruth in. There's something about Naomi that is very lovable. We don't have it written here, except that both daughters-in-law weep to see her leave. They love her. Ruth is taking that the love that comes from Naomi and saying, your people, your God, they'll be mine. There's something in your character, in your person, that draws me in. Who you worship is who I will worship. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, can this be Naomi? Now, some period of time has gone by. We know it was 10 years without her husband. So we don't know how long she was there with her husband before he died. Maybe 15 years. I don't know. When you recognize an old friend, you can see them after 10 or 15 years. You know, you used to think when you were little, if someone was separated for 10 or 15 years in old literature, they'd come in and be able to disguise themselves. Who is that stranger? That was the person that, you know, as if they didn't know each other. We do know each other after 10 or 15 years. But there's something in her aspect that makes them think, can this be Naomi? She left full. She left married and with two sons. And her name meant pleasant. There was something about Naomi that would have thought well-being. And now she comes back from probably looking poor, even though she's been in a land where there was food. She's destitute. She has nothing that belongs to her, including children. And now they say, can this be Naomi? Pleasant. Can this be her? Don't call me Naomi, she says in verse 20. She told them, call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. I want to stay on this theme for just a minute, that she keeps ascribing the affliction to the Lord. This is really important for us to understand. There are things that men do to men that are unjust and horrible, yet still the Lord allows us to suffer. He does. The Lord allows suffering. Does he always cause the suffering? No, because he does not make people do evil. He is not tempted by evil. That is also true. But he allows us. He could stop it, and he stays his hand. I do not understand the ways of the Almighty. I would not pretend to do so standing here. There are things in my life and in yours you think, why didn't he put his hand there and stop it? But his ways are not our ways. What he has promised is so superior to any suffering we have here that he says as we keep our eyes on what he's promised, it purifies us. It actually changes our focus to what he is going to provide. Some of you are in the midst of suffering. You're in bad shape. You have some fear in your heart when you go to sleep at night. How will things work out? And you can say, Lord, you have afflicted me. I am in trouble. There is no one but you that can redeem me from this. Nobody but you. But I will wait and look and see how your hand will resolve this, because I've asked the Almighty to move. But you can't get there unless you accept it first. This has come through the Lord. This has been allowed. This cup has come to me to drink. It is not blessing the thing, but he will bless you in the thing. The Lord has brought misfortune upon me. 22. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. That's about April or May. Ruth's name, by the way, sounds like friend in Hebrew. So we have pleasant turned to bitter and friend. And Bethlehem means house of food. So they have come home, or house of bread. They have come home to the place of well-being and satisfaction. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, this is just such a female story, I love it. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Now, y'all, this is like a coffee shop over the Coca-Cola kind of part of the story, you know. And so I went out, and you know whose field I ended up in? Boaz's. I didn't even know it. And I was in Boaz's field. Okay. This is where she ends up. Doesn't sound like she connived it, but like it's one of those wonderful serendipitous surprises. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. Don't you like him from the very beginning? You can just see him riding in. He's an older man. We know he's not a young one because he says so later. But he is a cheerful man. We know that just from this little story. He's a, hi, how are you? Howdy, bless you. The Lord bless you. And they yell back to him. The Lord bless you. That means his fields are in good order, you all. The people even that work for him are believers. They're walking. They're walking by faith. There's some that they are trusting God for their sustenance and their life. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, whose young woman is that? The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. Now, this was the way the law was written. She would have learned this from Naomi if they didn't do it in Moab, that the poor could go behind. I wish that we had this today, you all. Not just that we were handing out food to the hungry, but that we could say, McDonald's will be open from 1 to 2 for you to fry your hamburgers, what was left over from today. I'm serious. Where you could go and get behind, but you did something that brought respect to yourself to be able to get it. And this was a wonderful law the Lord had in place, to go behind and glean, and they were not supposed to pick everything dry. It was not a sign of a good worker to have taken every single stalk out of the field. That was not what the Lord wanted. He wanted them to, he said, don't do that. Leave some behind for the poor. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. So he gives her safety. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." What a beautiful blessing. You know, we've talked about this, how he's the God who sees, and he sees her through Boaz's eyes. He affirms her. "I see you, and your reputation has gone out. Your story has preceded you." He even interprets it here. You've come under the shadow of the Almighty. You haven't just been dutiful or kind of cast your fates in a different direction randomly, shooting craps. No, no. This woman, through love, followed and came under the sovereignty of the God of Israel. Her lot would be whatever he decided. So far, it hadn't been really good. That's where she was going. It was better than where she came from. There was something in the character of his people that drew her in. Even this man gives her a place to stand that's safe in the field. Have you ever been the new kid in the school? How many of y'all have ever moved and been the new kid? It's hard. You know, those first couple of days, you just don't really know who you're going to sit with in the cafeteria, where your desk is going to be, if anybody really likes you. I remember when we moved to Miami when I was 14, and it was really cool in Atlanta to wear rah-rahs. They were saddle Oxfords. We wore them for cheerleading, and we were just really cute. We had a little, you know, a little bouffant hairdos and all that. This was 1963. We moved to Miami, and I went to school in those saddle Oxfords. I was not a hit, okay? They wore Bernardo sandals. They were cute little Miami girls. It was very different. It took me a while. Plus, I talked like Gomer Pyle to them. So it took a long time to fit in to the Miami scene for me to find out. And I still bless the few friends that took me under their wing, said, "Come sit with us at the table. Come home after school. Do you want to ride with us to the football game?" They really didn't know me, but they took me in, Gomer Pyle and all. I mean, they'd play jokes on me, you know, and I'd go along with it. I was learning a lot I shouldn't have learned too, but I was learning how to get on my own 2 feet. She is saying she's in a field as a foreigner of people she doesn't even know. And he's saying, "Now you follow this group of people, and these people will not touch you. And there's the water barrel, and you have my permission to go anytime you want to drink." So there's a wow, an ease that has come to her. An ease has fallen on her, and a blessing. "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoke kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." That's humility. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." Now, don't you think this might have been balsamic vinegar? I think it was something really good and tasty like that. And she wasn't just going to have to eat, you know, whatever she had or nothing. He said, "Come dip bread in that good vinegar wine. Eat with us." He includes her. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." It wasn't just "don't get it all." He's saying, "Even what you've gleaned, throw some back out behind you." You know, what is so wonderful about this story is nowhere in it does it say Ruth was beautiful. There's nothing here that tells us that her looks are what was drawing him. It's her actions. It's her demeanor. There's something in the eye. It's always in the eye, y'all, isn't it? When you like somebody, it's when your eyes meet a certain way. You have a kin about something. You understand something. And looks go right out the window. It matters so little. is the person. And so he provides for her in a very abundant, but not, you know, he doesn't have the cart come up with the four drawn horses, you know, to go to the ball. It's not that. It's that he's seeing her and he's regarding what she is doing as a gift. He does not take that away from her. He embellishes what she can do, but he regards what she's doing. He respects her. Isn't that what we really, really like? Is that respect? And he does. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an epah. She carried it back to town to her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what was left over after she had eaten enough. In other words, at lunch, when she'd had enough, she had leftovers, and she brought them to her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today," she said, "is Boaz." "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, when Naomi says to her, he is a close kinsman, he's a kinsman redeemer, here's what she means. Some of you may have looked this up. The way the Lord set up the economy for the Jewish family was that they were not to ever cross the borders of what the land was given to their families. And if they began to lose it through death, they could not work it or own it, they had to sell it off, then one of the clan had rights in order probably of birth, who would have the chance to buy that land to keep it in the family, and they could build his family fortune through it. That is what she's saying. He's one who could better our situation. He's one who has not stopped doing good. And, you know, this is the second time Naomi said, she said it to the girls, "You have done good both to the dead and to the living." Now she says it of Boaz. He's not stopped doing good to the dead and to the living. And what that meant was, this is how God sees life and death. It isn't the separator for him that it is for us. When we do something in honor of someone who is on the other side, it is a good thing. It is a very good thing. He is a God of the living, not of the dead. Those people were not dead in God's eyes. And Boaz was acting that way, as if Mahlon and Chilion and their father, Elimelech, were still there. He was acting in kindness, not as one who could now take advantage of a situation. So this is the first we hear this address, redeemer. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." Now, this is scary. This is really scary, you know, to be told, "I think he's the one we go to. He's been kind to you, and here's what I want you to do. Clean up good. Look really good. Put on your best." Okay. And you know, we all look so much better when we do that. My brothers always have said about their sisters, "You clean up good," you know, because we look so entirely different when we do. But anyway, Ruth goes, she gets all, you know, cleaned and laundered, her hair's probably washed, and she looks good. But this is the first time this is mentioned. It doesn't say she's beautiful. It says she's putting on her best. She's going in the best, humble, but best she has to bring. This is a different posture. This is one of honor. She is honoring him by doing this and honoring her mother-in-law by doing this. She says, now don't show yourself till after he's had supper. He's in good spirits. He's finished for the evening. Because it could embarrass him, couldn't it? If you suddenly show up as if he had invited you and he had not. This was going to be a private transaction which he could not, nothing would happen that Boaz could lose face in. She's really protecting Boaz. She's allowing Boaz, in the goodness that he has shown, to say yes or no in private. I think it's wonderful that Ruth doesn't say, here, why don't you have him for Sunday dinner? I mean, we could do this a different way than for me to risk the rejection. She's willing to risk the rejection. I would have been very nervous at this point, no matter how nice the man had been, to be this forward in what would have been in another culture to have gone and done this. We don't have another record of this story, and it always seemed peculiar to me as a child, I'm sure it did to you too, that she would lie at his feet, uncover his feet, and lie down. I kept trying to picture, did she cover herself back up again? Did she, what, why did she leave his feet cold so he'd wake up? I mean, what is the deal with the lying down with the uncovered feet? It doesn't say. We have to just, except the story goes on. I will do what you say, Ruth answered, verse 5 of 3. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. So he's separate from his people. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. Now, it's a wonder she wasn't kicked, really. I mean, you know, men can kind of, what is that at the foot of the bed? But she doesn't. He wakes up. Probably the Lord is waking him up. But he sees this. They have an in the middle of the night intrigue talk. Who are you? He asks. It's dark. I am your servant, Ruth. She said, spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. This is probably his prayer shawl that has his identity in the fringe. But throw what your covering is over me. Covering is a sense of authority and care. It's responsibility. This is a symbol she's asking for. Throw it. She's saying very subtly, make me yours. But in a very proper way. The Lord bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. So he protects her. He also said, bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out. When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back in town. In other words, she was carrying this shawl full of grain. This time it wasn't that she went and had to pick it up off the ground. It's threshed. It's ready. It's the premier. And he has handed it and filled her shawl. He has blessed her. You wonder why he calls her kind, don't you? Just a little bit. Why does he say she's kind? There's something in him that appreciates that she is willing to come to this older man rather than seek the handsome, the young, the winsome. But what is good? She is seeking the lasting and the good, the upright. And he calls that kindness, that a good act, a noble act, he attributes to being kind to him. I mean, that's a very humble thing to say. You would prefer me. I think it shows a little chemistry myself. They were connecting in some way that he would recognize and appreciate that she would come to him. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, how did it go, my daughter? Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." In other words, don't go to work. Stay dressed, stay pretty. You're home now. Let's wait this thing out. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here," and they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so, but if you will not, tell me so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it." The reason he's saying this is if Ruth now has children, he takes her, then the land he's just paid money for out of his own children's estate, if he has any, or his own estate, is gone, because that land and stuff will now belong to Ruth's offspring. And so his own that he already had has been depleted for that to happen. He's not willing for that to happen. He was willing to have the land if he could profit from it, but not if it meant that his family profit from it. Outside family, farthest family away, distant cousin. "You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses." And they bless him. Listen, "May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." He is of the household of Judah. And he came through Perez, the twin born first to Judah, and Tamar, who was Judah's daughter-in-law. We don't have time to go into that, but I refer you to Genesis 38 to read that story. We had it another week, and perhaps you've studied it already, but even for those on the tape, you need to read it. It is a very difficult story, but one where you see how God holds a family together and cares for a widow. These men bless Boaz with that blessing, saying, "May she, like Rachel and Leah, built up Israel, may your wife build up Israel." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than 7 sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son." And they named him Obed, which means servant. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This, then, is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nashon, Nashon the father of Salmon, Salmon, the father of Boaz, Boaz, the father of Obed, Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of David. The royal kingship that will not go away, the one who will come through David's line, Messiah, will actually come through this little Moabitess grandmother who walked by faith and embraced God in the time of famine, embraced his sovereignty when it did not look good, and served in humility for someone else's good. It's a beautiful, beautiful story of grace. Jesus is our kinsman redeemer. He is the firstborn among many brothers. The New Testament tells us that at a time when it was just perfectly right, he came in the fullness of time. In the fullness, when it was absolutely the perfect time, he came. And he died for us while we were his enemies, not his friends. Not when it looked good. Not when we looked good did he die for us. But when we were at our worst. When we crucified people as our government. When mankind was at its most ordered evil and luxurious selves. When the Jews were far from love of God and fed up to here, just filled up with legalism that did not bring life. At the perfect time, while we were still his enemies, he died for us when it did not look good. And he redeemed us and bought us back and cleanses us and puts his robe over us and lets all the blessings that come to him be ours. And he says, fix your eyes on this. Let your eye be single so your body is full of light. And seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And all the things you want will be added to you. What you long for in his time will come to you. Whether it's this life, you will be blessed if it is this life. You will be blessed if it is not this life. Because he blesses those who even die not seeing what they hoped for, but are still looking ahead. We are called to faith, to noble character, to serve. And this little baby named Servant, isn't that a wonderful name? I thought he'd be named Mahlon after the son of Naomi who died, but he's not. He's given this wonderful name, Servant. And through this servant, David comes and produces the servant king, Jesus, through his line. I bless you today. This is a wonderful story. Go and talk about it. Bless each other. Pray for each other if you're in difficulty. The Lord wants us to be merciful and kind to one another and generous.